From the Middle is proud to be a founding member of the Odd Pods Media Network. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 124 of From the Middle. We are a podcast hailing from Columbus, Ohio. We are three middle-class guys living in the middle of America, in the middle chapters of our lives with a point of view that is somewhere in the middle. And we are here, and we are happy. We're going to be talking a lot about streaming, Squid Game, Only Murders in the Building, wrestling, all kinds of streaming stuff. That is this episode. What are we watching, and do we like it? Diving into especially Squid Game for the front half of this episode. Spoiler alert on some of that. In any case, love you guys. Thank you. And roll the music.
Oh, for the love. Sorry, just clearing my Mountain Dew hole.
I got my phone hole clean today.
That's where you keep it?
You're so cerebral, and you're so developed and evolved.
All right, so I've got two stories that I think that you both might enjoy, as you've talked about overthinking, and I don't typically talk about overthinking.
Okay. You suffer from this affliction as well?
No, but I just thought you'd appreciate the stories. So,
robots can't laugh, don't cry, can't die in the darkness of space.
Exactly.
These are strong, made of steel with a graphite lining. Watch his eyes flicker slow as the battery is dying. Sorry.
Wow, that was beautiful. You're a poet laureate.
I loved it.
That was Brave Saint Saturn. Anyway.
Anyways, so you guys both have kids. A lot of the listeners do too, or they are kids. So you know how it is when you're driving along and you're sort of talking to your significant other and the kids talking. You're trying to bounce between multiple conversations and do so, like, you know, be like the super engaged parent or whatever. And so we're doing that. And we've now pulled up into Target into the curbside section. So now my wife has handed me her phone because I'm going to have to show them the code on her phone and interact with them and add a third conversation to what's happening.
Okay.
So we're sitting there, put the window down, pop the trunk, and I hold the phone. I just hold the phone out the window with the brightness all the way up. That way, if they don't want to be close to other people, they can just see it from afar. And if they want to come closer to the window, that's fine.
That's thoughtful.
So I'm holding the phone out the window. They come up. They're like, oh, hey, here's your code. You know, do you want it in the trunk? Well, of course, the trunk's already open. So I say, yep, trunk's great. And so I'm trying to interact while still talking to wife and daughter, you know, kind of like turning away so I'm not rude to the Target person that's standing outside the window. And this is after a day of work that was really busy, so I'm also a little tired. I'm trying to manage the conversations well. And as a Target person is loading, my window is still down. They're putting things in the trunk. And they're like, okay, you're good to go. Have a good night. And I catch myself right before a big night-night comes out because I'm also interacting with my daughter. And fortunately, I didn't say it, but have you ever been inside? It was like a good night. But I knew it was going to be night-night. I knew it in my head. And that's what was going to come out. And it didn't, thankfully. Saved from embarrassment. But I don't know. Have you ever done... It reminds me of some Brian Regan stand-up where it's like saying the wrong thing. The waiter or waitress drops off their food. Like, enjoy your food. And then he says, you too. Yeah. You know, back to the waiter. Do you ever have those... Have you ever done that? Have you ever thrown back the totally wrong thing at the person that you're interacting with?
I have a really awkward memory from talk about overthinking from when I was like five.
Sure.
And I got like the McDonald's birthday party that I always wanted to have. And or I think it was actually Burger King, doesn't matter. But I remember at that age, like all of the parents dropping off their kids telling me happy birthday, and I would always say thanks, you too. And every single time I'd be like, that was stupid. but I still did it like every single time because I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, I knew my daughter was going to say goodnight to the target person. So like my brain got ahead of myself trying to say night, night to my daughter.
Yeah.
So that was one. I saved being an idiot, just at least that moment. The other one, actually, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, happened on the way here. So I'm driving on the way to where we record in our studio, and I'm stopped at an intersection in a small village, and ahead of me, I can see, that a semi has turned from my right into the lane that I want to go into. I want to go straight. So they've turned right to drive straight. They would be theoretically ahead of me.
Right.
Well, they've turned and they've gotten themselves stuck on the curb. So they're sticking so far out that now no cars can go that direction. They can only come the opposite direction that the semi is trying to go, because the town has one of those big metal bells, like it's like imitation Liberty Bell or something, that's sitting on the corner of the thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's gotten stuck on that.
Oh, boy.
And so now I'm trying to figure out how I get around. And it's kind of, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to turn and go around it and come out the other side of this gas station that it's stuck at and get around it. Well, right before I'm ready to turn, I can see the guy has jumped in the cab and is just going to wing it. And then I hear a doo-doo really loud, and he's just driven over the bell with his cab. And I'm thinking, certainly it's like torn the underside of his truck or it's about to fall apart. Well, right then the light turns green, and that means I'm now the car that's going to be right behind this semi because he's turned and I can now go straight.
Yeah.
And so I've played enough Grand Theft Auto, the video game, to know that you can just trash a car to the point that it only needs one more little ding or scratch and it's going to explode everywhere. So I'm behind this semi thinking this is the only route to get to where I'm trying to go and in a remotely reasonable amount of time. And I'm stuck behind this, and I'm thinking, God forbid a squirrel runs out. This thing's going to explode in front of my car. And I think it can go one of two directions. It's going to either be like a movie and my car will burst through the flames somehow in the air as if I'd hit a ramp and I'll be okay. Or my car is going to look like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles after it lights on fire on the interstate, and it's just going to be charred. And I'm just waiting for this semi to get the last nick that it needs to explode on me. And thankfully no squirrels were harmed in the making of this story. It turned off, or I turned off or whatever before, it imploded, in front of me. And so that was my second one. Do you ever have these situations where you're in a park, in a business district, in a whatever, you're driving along and you have these video game or movie-esque scenarios play out in your mind as you're doing whatever it is that you're doing? Like, here I am expecting a Grand Theft Auto style explosion of this semi in front of me, because it's going to like nick a telephone pole and just be annihilated.
Yeah.
I think we all do that. I've been stuck behind a FedEx and UPS trucks being stopped at a light side by side. And I'm like, I'm just waiting for these guys to get out with bats and like go at each other, because that's what's got to happen. Yeah. I feel like.
I knew I had been playing far too much Animal Crossing during the pandemic when I was outside and a butterfly landed near me and I went to pull my net up.
Jam the X button.
I was like, oh, that's a real butterfly on a real bush.
And I don't own a real net.
And I don't own a real net. I've been playing far too much Animal Crossing.
No kidding.
Or another common one might be you see the semi that hauls all the, like, the cars for sale. You're just waiting for one car to ramp up it, like at a stoplight or something.
Yeah.
You know that only happens in video games, but you're just waiting for that moment.
Yeah. I don't know. Thinking of how cool that would be to see that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it when, and in video games, and this happens in Warzone sometimes, where you're like, that vehicle only needs one more shot to it, and it's going to go from driving to a ball of flame.
Yeah.
And you hope that you can shoot that guy.
Yeah.
But not in real life. Don't do that in real life.
I imagine that these moments of like intrusive thinking and that you go to this video game space and you either want to see it or you want to act it out or something like that. Like the endorphins are kicking because like you want this thing to happen or whatever, or you wish it would. In my thinking, that is how parkour started.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that I want it to. I think I just, you know, somebody who doesn't know me well might say, you've just watched too many movies and played too many video games. I just like to think I have a very active imagination. And so it's not that I want the semi to explode in front of my car.
Yeah.
But I just think I've seen something like that happen before. I know how this goes. And whether it's real or not, or completely in my own head, I feel like there's got to be enough with enough thought. Somebody who's listening to this episode.
Yeah. Comment below,
email, voice message, do any of those things. If you're on any of our profiles, there's a links account where you can tap it and our numbers there. You can text us or leave us a voicemail. There's got to be situations where your imagination took you to a video game or movie-esque scenario in your mind that had nothing to do with reality, but you could almost see it happen. And those situations have to exist.
Yeah, let us know. Speaking of getting a hold of us, so I told a story, I think it was last week on the podcast, about Chloe and I going to a park at night and me scaring some some teenage boys.
Yeah.
And we got an email from a listener who said, so the story at the park went a lot different than I expected. My brain pictured hearing these tween boys talking about how creepy it was to be at a park in the dark and witness an adult male luring a young girl into the playground with an ice cream cone.
That's my mind went there too.
But since they noticed that you weren't driving a white van with no windows, they assumed it was all cool.
Creepy.
Who knows what they went home and told their friends, right?
So then there's this guy.
There's this guy.
They probably have their own podcast too.
Yeah.
But are they 8 spots behind the office ladies on Good Pods? Nope.
Doubt it.
Not right now they aren't, because that's us.
That is us.
Oh, that's awesome. Speaking of creepy, so I know it's the in vogue thing to do, and I'm not all about the trends, but I just finished Squid Game on Netflix.
Me too.
You watched it too?
I just finished. My wife and I both.
I'm so excited to talk to you about this. You're probably not. It's a little grotesque and gory. I don't see it being a show. I don't know how much we can.
You can talk about it as much as you want. I mean, Netflix has said like 111 million people in the world have streamed it. It's like the most popular thing they've ever created.
It's easily on the way to by far becoming the most popular thing ever on Netflix.
Yeah. And so I get a sense that it's basically like game show meets Saw, the movie Saw, essentially. So I don't think any amount of gruesome is going to spoil what I know it to be. So you guys go. I mean, I know. That's
I'm excited.
That's the extent of my knowledge.
Into the meat of Squid Game. So yes, there's more research I want to do on the backstory of this show. Because like you said, Kendall, it's on pace right now to become the biggest series ever on Netflix.
Yeah.
And the creator of the show tried to get it produced for like 10 years and nobody would pick it up.
Yeah.
Hundreds of studio execs passed on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Korean show. Like Dylan said, it's kind of a cross between Saw and Hunger Games and a game show. Overall thoughts. When did you start watching? How did you hear?
Wait, is this spoiler free for anyone who
I'm trying
does
to,
care?
Let's just do general thoughts first and then maybe we'll.
Okay. Loved it. It definitely binge worthy. Couldn't wait to watch the following episodes. My wife and I watched it over the course of maybe a week.
Yeah.
But that's only because we don't spend a whole ton of time sitting down in front of the TV, just the two of us, because we definitely don't want the kids in the room for that. But no, intriguing. The story was fantastic. The whole idea behind it is unique to me. I've never, it makes me go back and think of the times and the moments when I would be playing games, or even today, sometimes my mind goes, if I'm playing a video game, like an old football, retro football on my phone or something, thinking, man, what if Tom Brady were right next to me, seeing how awesome I am at this football game on my phone kind of thing. And when you're a kid, you're playing these little playground games and you're thinking, oh, I wish I could do this professionally. I wish this would mean something or whatever. And then Squid Game happens. And like, you've got these adults who are playing these playground games, and like, life is at stake. And the premise of the show is that they get out of debt.
So this is
the tune of billions of dollars.
Yeah,
if they win.
People down on their luck, deeply indebted to loan sharks or banks or whatever, are found by these very well put together businessmen who one-on-one play some little game with them. Mm-hmm. And then, depending on how that game goes, they're left a business card and a phone number. And they can call that number, and the promise is they typically would get money in that first game they played. And the promise is there's a lot more where that came from.
Right.
And all you had to do was play this little game. So because their real life situation is so desperate, they call this place. It says, show up at this location. A van with no windows comes and picks them up, where gas comes out of the ventilation system in the car. And they wake up in jumpsuits with numbers on them with 455 other people. And they are told, you are going to play six games over the course of however many days. And if you lose, you will be eliminated, and for every person eliminated, the pot of money gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so it's essentially be the last person standing in this. But there are three rules, and I forget the three rules right now. One, you have to play the game. You can't stop the game. I forget the three rules.
I don't remember three rules.
Yeah, and the third is, like, if the majority votes to stop the entire game, the game is done.
Right.
But you, and as an individual, must play the game. Anyway, so the moral dilemmas, and every game is not every man for himself. Sometimes you have to team up, but you don't know what the game is.
Right.
So you're like teaming up, and you don't know, is this a strength thing? Is this a IQ thing? Is this a... So, and the moral dilemmas, and just so well written, and the music, and it's beautifully shot, and there's all these fan theories about, because it's very colorful, because it's children's games, it's very colorful with a very pastel-y kind of color palette. So people are online on Reddit going, what do the colors mean? Is it the CMYK print code, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black? And is that correlate to the hierarchy of power in the show? Not sure what that means. And oh, it's so good. Yeah. I couldn't stop watching.
It is good, man. And there's stuff like that you can dig into with that. I was reading an article recently about the guy who had created the show, and it is very much like high school literature class, like reading into Great Expectations and all of the foreshadowing and what the colors mean and that kind of thing. Like, he did intentionally put a lot of that kind of thing into the storyline, which is very cool, very interesting.
So it's a Korean film, completely Korean cast.
Yep.
Did you watch it with the English voices dubbed over, or did you watch the Korean audio and English subtitles?
Dubbed voices.
Yeah, so I heard from multiple people that's not the way to go if you haven't watched yet, because once you flip back to Korean and do English subtitles, multiple people have said, oh, they're good actors.
Yeah.
The English dubbing is so over the top that it almost comes off as silly. But in a way, because the show is so grotesque, that plus the fact that they're playing children's games with a pastel color palette actually made it seem less threatening.
Yeah.
So I kind of liked it with the over the top English dub.
Well, and to me, like, I mean, there are some parts and some characters that were obviously annoying with the dubbing, but I was able to get past some of the badness of the dubbing. Simply because of that little exercise that we did with copy and paste films.
Yeah, touche.
It was not that bad. I did hear there's a gal on TikTok or Twitter or both who is Korean and watched it in Korean and had very strong opinions about how the subtitles were so poorly put together.
Yes.
For this film, when you watch it in Korean, like you have this annoying lady who 212. Actually, yeah, who actually has like a very deep and interesting character that didn't come through. Her entire purpose of being on the film did not come through at all. If you were watching,
because her voice version. Is so unique.
Because her voice is, but even what she was saying was different. It was they were missing parts of the story.
So I have a colleague from South Korea, Dae-hee, and we were talking about it as well. And he's like, yeah, it doesn't do the actual dialogue justice because some things just don't translate as rich in English as it actually is in Korean. And so it's kind of dumbed, I don't want to say dumbed down for an American audience, but some of the things just don't translate. But man, it was good. Man, it was so good. I wanted to watch every next episode. Did the gore bother either you or Amy at all? Because it's
gore never bothers me. I'm a horror film guy.
Yeah,
it often does bother my wife to an extent. I don't know. She didn't seem particularly bothered by it, but if I were to ask her, she would probably say something like, eh, "I could have done without it, but it was fine."
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I have a question. So as somebody who's not seen it, everyone's seen the commercials where they have the sort of security guard characters with the Xbox button faces.
Yes.
You know, what are those called? What are those people called?
Guards?
Guards.
Are they just guards?
Soldiers.
They're the ones who are kind of physically running the games.
Okay. They're the muscle
they're the
businessmen.
Muscle. There's soldiers, there's tech staff.
Okay. But yeah, the symbols, triangle, circle, and square are ranks.
Okay. I think one of the best comments I saw after one of the trailers was, can't wait for all the security and staff to dress up like that at every gaming and comic convention for the next 2 years.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
just to get those masks and wear those, because it's such a unique part of the trailer. Like, you can't, you know, if they were just normal faces, it wouldn't stand out as much as seeing these sort of faceless guard characters.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that pops on the trailer.
Right.
And so that was one of those things that you assume that's what it is. So they're the enforcers. They're the brute.
And then there's a front man, and he wears a black mask that looks like a human face. And he's called the front man. Did I already say that? And he's the facilitator of the game. And then there are the VIPs, and they wear gold embellished animal masks. You don't see them, you don't meet them until later in the series. And they're the rich viewers of the games.
Yeah, they're obviously sponsoring the games and are full of life, greedy, dirty old men. That's who they are.
I thought it was funny that even the dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, took the film as an opportunity to say how depraved capitalistic societies are, to use it like a jab at like South Korea and American film industries. But I don't know if you guys ever saw a couple years ago, the movie Parasite was the first foreign film to ever win Best Picture. And I think that was also a South Korean film. And I don't know. It had some very gory scenes for sure. I would say it was a drama thriller is how I would describe it, but not at all like this, just the same genre. But it's interesting. I don't know how much it makes me want to go learn more about South Korean film culture, because some of the most popular forms of content we've now seen in the last few years are this show and Parasite.
And dramas. South Korean dramas especially are very popular.
And I would assume they make lots of different content, but it's just interesting that two of the most popular we've now seen are like gory drama thrillers.
Yeah.
One a show and one a film.
So Kendall, what did you think about the lead for 56? You know, at first he's stealing from his own mother. These aren't really spoilers. He's stealing from his own mother. He's down on his luck. He's down and out. His wife, he's divorced from his wife. She has since remarried and his child lives with her primarily. And he's deeply in debt. He's kind of a skeezy guy. And then he has some endearing qualities throughout the show. What did you think about him as the lead? And did you like him more or less as the show went on?
I liked him more, certainly, as the show went on.
Yeah.
That first episode, which explains all of the things that you had just said, is hard to watch. My wife actually started watching Squid Game without me, and she didn't make it past those moments of the first episode and quit watching because it was upsetting her that much.
Yeah, if you're going to follow this guy, you need him to be relatively likable.
Yeah, and so he... Just to give people context, like he is, if you have ever known a compulsive gambler, that's who this guy is.
He lies to everybody
about money, is constantly borrowing money and is taking that to the track and is addicted to gambling, has a legitimate problem, owes money to bookies and everything. Like he's in deep trouble, but he can't stop gambling anything that he has. And it's deeply upsetting to see how that affected his marriage, how it's affecting his mother, who he's living with, and their ability to pay for anything, for rent, food, whatever. His ability to not only be able to afford a decent gift for his daughter's birthday, but it even affects like the time that he's able to spend with her, and because he's got to be somewhere gambling.
And he sort of justifies it by going like, well, I'm doing it to pay this thing off so I can pay this thing off.
Yeah.
So there's this cycle of
the addiction. So you really have to get, I really had to get through that. And I mean, you can tell, if you've watched movies or read books, you know that you're going to probably end up liking this guy at some point. And so I had faith in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that got me. And by the end of the episode, like you're starting to turn on to this guy a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he meets a friend from his past. And
somebody referred to him as the Korean Ed Norton. He's kind of got an Ed Norton quality to him.
Yeah. But I love the guy by the end of the, by the end of the season.
Yeah. Is there anything we want to like talk about that would be spoilery?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, let's do it. So if you haven't finished the series yet, maybe just skip ahead a little bit. Starting now. we'd give you a timestamp on when we're going to stop talking about it, but we don't know how long we are. So maybe we'll edit splice that in later. So when there's 456 people playing, so the very first game is red light, green light. There's this big, creepy statue doll that has cameras as eyes facing away from the group, and she says green light, and then when she turns around and says red light, her camera eyes spot any movement, and snipers from the walls that these people are in the middle of just start firing on every person that's moved past her saying red light. And even if the person moving is behind somebody who legitimately stopped, that's just a casualty of the game. And you don't really, it's like a rude awakening to the violence of the game. You're like, holy smokes, this show is going to be, there's five more games coming. So you're just like, oh my gosh.
It's already a bloodbath.
But again, it's like really bright colors and like, and it's almost Tarantino-esque in its over the topness. So if you've watched Tarantino films or where the gore is like almost unbelievably over the top, it kind of doesn't bother you as much because you know it's like ketchup packets and gas capsules, and you're like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah, but it does. It does have that feel to it where it's where you're seeing this tragedy in front of you, over the top gore and everything, but things are happening in slow motion and it's choreographed and the bright colors music. And Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon's playing. it's like that.
Yeah.
It's that kind of eerie feel.
Yeah.
You're right. That Tarantino was known for.
Yeah. So then as the games go on, now the people participating are people that you have a vested interest in because you've watched them in multiple episodes now. Even people that you don't like, you kind of enjoy watching them because they're an antagonist to the show. And now some of these people are getting taken out. Probably the most fascinating. And there's so many moral dilemmas throughout. At one point, the group agrees to stop the game and they all go home. So it's the reverse of everything you watched at the beginning. They're put in a car, they're gassed, they show up on the street, they wake up on the street in their neighborhood. And you're like, wow, they got out. And then they all kind of realize that their lives are just as bad, if not worse, in debt still with no solution and no way out. And so they all find their way back, not all of them. A good percentage
most
of them.
Most of them,
I think. Most of them find their way. They all agree to go back into this slaughterhouse game scenario because their thought process is, well, at least there I got a chance. And you're like, oh my gosh. So they go back into the game. And the most fascinating thing for me is when they're told to either pair up or create a group of 10 or create a group of 5 or whatever, and they don't know what the game is. So yeah. There's a lot of sexism because they're like, well, it's probably going to be a physical game, so we don't want any girls or whatever. And then some games, they're like, they're told to pair up once, and you think, oh, this is going to be, they're going to be on the same team. And it's a game of marbles where one of them has to lose. So there are husbands and wives in the game who have paired up thinking at least we're together and one of them is going to get eliminated.
The reality is they're playing against each other.
Oh, but they had no way of knowing that, right?
Right.
So the show starts this sort of like plateau in this one moment where a character that you've sort of really grown to like, an old man, number one, and the lead, 456, pair up, as well as a friend of the lead, childhood friend of the lead, and somebody else. The friend is this ruthless, he'll do anything to win, and that's how he justifies all of his actions. But spare no expense, he will do whatever it takes to win, stab people in the back, and you see him do that in this one-to-one game of marbles.
Mm-hmm.
And then when 456 and 1 are doing the marbles thing, and the old man, number one, has dementia, and he's starting to lose it a little bit. And you see, you've now grown to really like the lead, and he's starting to see the situation that one is in. And so there's this cost value thing going on where he's like, he's becoming a liability to himself and the rest of us. And it almost becomes this mercy thing where he's like, maybe I just take him out of the game now for his benefit and my own, but he does it very reluctantly. Mm-hmm. Whereas his childhood friend is doing it ruthlessly. So they're both kind of cheating, but one is doing it very like, I really don't want to do this, but and so there's so many really good moments like that. And I won't say how that plays out, but that's the thing where you try to ask yourself, like, if I was in that situation, which of these characters would I be behaving most like?
Yeah.
And I would like to think that I would be doing this, but when fear and desperation take over, would I actually find myself being more like this other person? So there's just all these fascinating like character arcs that play out throughout the show. I keep going back to the aesthetics and the music, but it really does make it very poetic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me want to watch the show again.
It is a good show. If you're not bothered by the gore,
yeah.
And I mean, there's suicide in it, and things like that. If that sort of thing doesn't bother you, it's a really interesting, good, thought-provoking thing to watch.
I remember thinking that about Hunger Games, and that's kind of what it felt most like to me. Like, I remember watching Hunger Games, and it's the scene where they drop the big cornucopia of food, and one of the
tougher alpha kids just snaps the neck of a weaker kid, and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I watching?
Yeah, very similar to that.
Anyway, have we made you want to watch it yet, Dylan?
It sounds super interesting. yeah, maybe.
On a much lighter note, are we good on Squid Game? Do we want to keep talking? I could keep talking about it, but this is going to become a Squid Game episode.
Well, who knows? Yeah.
Either way, let's take a quick break and hear from one of our friends in the Odd Pods Media Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the Montesquieu Podcast. I am...
No, dude. This is our promo, not the show. I'm Rico.
Oh, sorry. I'm CJ, and we're the hosts of the Podeskew Podcast.
We're fans of pretty much anything and everything pop culture, including movies, TV shows, books, video games, comics, music, and of course, Kevin Smith. Now, while we do keep our fingers on the pulse of Silent Bob, he certainly doesn't need our help in promoting him.
You got that right. We do our own thing, with inspiration from the man himself and his mantra of why not. We've got stories about celebrities, we've interviewed theories of our own for certain movies, and we can usually tend to have a great debate about anything.
We also do commentaries on movies. Sometimes we ask our fans what they want to watch with us. So if you love the timbre of our vocal cords and want to watch a movie at the same time, give us a listen.
Stay tuned every Monday, there's always something new. And if you've been good this year, we may even give you a bonus episode from time to time.
So please be good and subscribe to and enjoy Podescu. Founding member of the Odd Pods Media Network.
So the only other thing I've been watching that I was excited to talk to you especially about, Dylan, because I know your fondness for these actors, is Only Murders in the Building on Hulu with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Have you seen the trailer for that?
I've seen the trailer. I know a bit about the premise.
Yeah.
It totally plays into the true crime podcast thing. Which I get super, super. I mean, I'm not a huge true crime podcast fan, but I get why people enjoy them.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I really want to watch it. We just finished watching back through Schitt's Creek. And I think actually the Only Murders in the Building is the next thing we're going to start.
How was the second watch through of Schitt's Creek? But because I have such a fondness for that show.
I think I've said this before on the podcast, it's probably legitimately the best comedy since The Office that I've seen or watched or heard of.
High praise.
Yeah, and I don't think it's better than The Office, but it's really good. It's legitimately a fantastic comedy. And I think the hard thing is for some people, if you start watching it, and if you don't know anything about Schitt's Creek, which I find that hard to imagine, but if anyone doesn't even know the premise, super wealthy family loses everything, moves to middle of nowhere, and lives in a motel. Mm. At first, for obvious reasons, they're intentionally kind of unlovable. And some people will only watch a couple episodes and go, I just don't really...
These people are annoying.
They're kind of annoying. Well, yeah. Like, that's exactly how you're supposed to feel. But I think if you get into season two, season three, they really start to develop... and it's super good. So anyways, part of what was jarring for the first go through of Schitt's Creek for me, season six felt a little disjointed from the end of season five. And that's if I'm being really trying to find something to
refresh my memory. Where does five end and six pick up?
That's if I'm trying to be critical. I don't remember the exact episode because we just blitzed through it all together, but it's something like, the main daughter's boyfriend is living in the Galapagos.
Oh, yeah.
And the main son's character is going to be getting married. And, I didn't notice any seam at all on the watch through. Like, five rolled right into six and it totally made sense. And it really is. I think there's six episodes total. It's a super strong sitcom comedy. I mean, it's been one of the most popular comedies probably streaming other than The Office and a handful of other classics, but it was so good. Yeah, it was great. But back to Only Murders in the Building. So I think that's the next thing we want to tee up because Steve Martin and Martin Short, they're such a great duo all the way back to Three Amigos, which I watched a lot when I was younger. And I learned this the other day. I wasn't old enough to really remember kind of society's take. Steve Martin and Chevy Chase were well established at that point. Martin Short was like a nobody going into that movie.
Okay.
Which made me think, how did he get cast alongside those two that were super well known when that movie was released? But they've been, Martin Short and Steve Martin have been friends ever since. They've done the Father of the Bride movies together and other. They had a comedy special on Netflix together. You can still go watch.
They would travel together for like a two-man show.
And
I think that, I think they still do that.
Yeah. I think so. And, you know, Steve Martin plays banjo or guitar or something. And so he pulls that into the comedy show. And they sort of like to bust each other's chops, as, you know, back and forth as their shtick. But I was very intrigued by this whole idea of this. I don't know, it's a dramedy. It's meant to be serious but funny, but
yeah, it feels mostly comedy. The tone is almost that of the television version of Series of Unfortunate Events that was on Netflix. My kids were watching through it. Neil Patrick Harris played the main villain guy that Jim Carrey did in the cinematic version. So it's this almost like the music and the upbeatness of it makes it feel like this comedy mystery, like a Clue or something like that. There is a murder in their building in New York, and they decide to start a true crime podcast about it as they decide to also investigate it. So there's what's actually going on with the investigation with the law enforcement, and then the clues that they are discovering separate from what law enforcement knows. So each week their listeners are waiting with bated breath to figure out what's going on in their investigation, but it's a real murder investigation. And then there are other murders attached to it. So there's multiple murders in this building and you don't know who done it. In that aspect, it feels very much like Clue. But Steve Martin is absolutely Steve Martin. Martin Short is absolutely Martin Short. I don't think ever been anybody that isn't Martin Short. So he's typecast as himself, and their chemistry is undeniable. Selena Gomez is this interesting addition to their chemistry, and I didn't follow her on the Disney Channel or anything she's done since. So I, you know, she's just like an interesting layer. But again, it's just really well done. And the final episode, the season finale comes out this week. And Sherry and I have been loving it. Sherry, typically not a fan of shows with too many F-bombs. This one does have a lot of F-bombs, but not a lot of gore, no gratuitous sex or anything like that. Just a lot of language. And but again, it's fun and something kind of different. And it was something that we could agree on as a couple. So I think you'll enjoy it.
It's, at least for us, it's hard to watch Steve Martin and Martin Short and their energy and body language and their delivery and not just have fun. In the same way, some people can get sick of that, or they can get sick of the Jim Carrey type or the Robin Williams type when he was still acting. I get it, but it's like, I just enjoy their delivery. It's so silly and over the top when you need something. You know, when you need something more upbeat and fun, like Ted Lasso or like Only Murders in the Building, it just feels like a nice, refreshing, you know, break from Squid Game or or something like that. So I'm looking forward to watching it. So Squid Game is on Netflix. This is on Hulu.
This is on Hulu. Yeah.
For anybody looking. So, we'll definitely check it out. Maybe we'll circle back with our thoughts. But I'm definitely excited to give it a shot.
It's a fun romp.
I want to take a moment on Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, after we finished Squid Game, we began Ted Lasso.
Hey. And I think what I said last time we talked about it, it's worth a free trial.
It is.
Even if you just watch Ted Lasso.
And what's funny about that is I didn't even realize that I had a subscription to Apple TV Plus.
Look at that.
I didn't even know it. And so I did. I took your advice and literally, instead of just canceling it, I told my wife, I was like, I just got an email like renewing my subscription for Apple TV Plus that I don't remember ever signing up for. Before I cancel it, let's do Dylan's idea and watch Ted Lasso. Love. There is not a more likable character
right
on the universe.
It's so good.
Than Ted Lasso. And like, I'm already picking up one-liners from them and annoying my wife with them. And
yeah, baby.
It is. If I were, here's the thing. If I were scrolling through what to stream next, I'm not a big fan of, I love sports. I don't like the sports series kinds of things. Like, I'm not a Friday Night Lights kind of guy.
Sure.
I would have gone right past Ted Lasso. But it's not about soccer whatsoever. Yeah. As a matter of fact, kind of the point is Ted doesn't know anything about soccer.
Yeah.
And so you don't need to know anything about soccer. You don't even have to like soccer. You're going to love Ted Lasso.
So freaking good.
I love it.
And that's what I was saying. It's that, like, at our best, it's that American optimism and silly comedy. And you just can't help but love it because it's so sweet and funny. And, you know, it's what a lovable show.
Yeah.
There's no other way to describe it other than it's totally worth binging. Subscription or not, do the trial or not or whatever. It's just so sweet. And so now, have you watched both season one and two?
No, we've watched like four episodes.
Oh my gosh. And it gets even better.
Yeah.
I love it so much. It's such a sweet show. I can't wait. And I just heard, it's a rumor. Everyone kept saying they're only doing three seasons. There might be a fourth.
Uh-oh.
Which I would be very excited about.
Hopefully.
Beep, boop, beep, boop.
There's so much I've got to finish. And Ted Lasso season two is one of those things on my list. I'm glad you're enjoying it, man. Yeah, he's so darn likable. And I love the assistant coach.
Yes.
Oh, man. So funny.
There's so much to laugh at that show. And it's funny. Part of what you laugh at is how lovable and likable Ted Lasso is. There's just something like I want to be Ted Lasso.
I see so many posts like we all need a Ted Lasso in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I really get into a show, it's like wanting to watch the behind the scenes. I just happened to be watching it as they were winning lots of awards. So I would see YouTube clips on, like, you know, Brett Goldstein talking at this award show or Jason Sudeikis, or I'm blanking on some of the other actors' names, some of the female leads. Every single time one of them talks about the show, they all just seem like they're legitimately having the best time.
Yeah.
And like, I know that's kind of what you do, even if you don't feel that way, but sometimes you can kind of tell, like, Harrison Ford doesn't really care that he was ever in Star Wars. Like, right. You just know he doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't take more than, you know, 30 seconds of an interview to figure that out. But like, they all just seem genuinely so grateful and excited about having been a part of it. It was really cool watching some of the award stuff and see their reaction to winning, Emmys or Grammys or whatever, not Grammys, Emmys, you know, for the show. So, it makes you enjoy it more. I can't wait to go back and blitz through season one and two again.
So I don't know if we have more thoughts on shows, but Dylan, you just mentioned Robin Williams earlier and I had sent you guys a video. Doesn't matter if you've watched it or not. Everybody, if you're a Robin Williams fan at all or a comedy fan at all, stop what you're doing, pause this episode, and go to YouTube and search Jamie Costa Robin Williams screen test. And I don't know the whole backstory on this screen test in quotes, but Jamie Costa is an actor who I think he was on one of the social media apps, but he has a likeness to Robin Williams and was doing an impersonation of Robin Williams. And then when Robin died in 2014, this Jamie Costa guy sort of blew up because he did this tribute video called A Friend Like Me, where it was like his little tribute to Robin Williams. And so people were like, this guy, just like the actor Sebastian Stan, people were like, this guy has to play Luke Skywalker. Fans of Star Wars are like demanding this guy has to play Luke Skywalker. Robin Williams fans from this screen test are demanding a Robin Williams biopic based on this little screen test alone. It just got released like this past week. And it's just like a 6 or 7 minute little clip of Jamie Costa as Robin Williams in his dressing room for Mork and Mindy when he finds out that
John Belushi
died. And the voice, the facial expressions,
all of it,
the subtle... The most subtle of Robin's mannerisms and even what he would do with his hands when he was talking to someone, it is insane. And so I saw that on Bad Friends podcast. They were talking about it. It's impressive. And this guy, I mean, he could just do Robin Williams stuff for the rest of his life, but he's also phenomenally talented and has been in multiple films, and including one of the Jurassic World films or whatever. But anyway, that was really noteworthy, and I thought worth checking out if you get 7 minutes.
It's funny, you sent the video. I haven't watched the video yet, but I saw an article with a still of just his face, and I went, holy cow, are they making a Robin Williams like biopic or something?
Yeah.
And then I saw the headline, and so I've got to watch the video now. If you follow us on the Facebook From the Middle page, or From the Middle for the Middlers, and on Twitter, we'll share out the link to the video. If you don't follow us those places, and we'll make sure to share it so you can find it. Because even from a still, I thought, they've got to be making something.
Well, even so, I did watch the video because I care about my friend.
Thank you, Kendall. I really appreciate that.
And
you're my new brother.
I'm not my brother's keeper.
it is fantastic. Spot on. And to be honest, up until this very moment, I thought it was for something that
is
coming out. And that's how well done that video was.
Yeah, it's really well done. I don't know if he personally did it as a pitch, or if it truly was a screen test, if it was done by a studio, I don't know. But it looks, somebody commented below, like, he lived such a crazy life, Robin Williams. Where do you even... What parts of that life do you even start to tell? Like the other actors in comics he was friends with, I mean, how he came up in comedy, like which major show that he did, like how do you even start biopic of his life?
Even less important stuff, like he was a huge gamer. He named his daughter Zelda. Like that's just something that most people didn't know about him, but that was a community he was huge in. And I think that's helped... You know, he'll have staying power for a long time as far as the internet is concerned. But yeah. I think places like Reddit and Twitter and some of the spaces that maybe millennials and younger live in, that's also a thing that's commonly talked about, is how much he loved gaming and some of his favorite games and, you know, just being involved in those communities. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks amazing. So here's the comment. My only issue with this biopic of Robin Williams is there's so much to cover from his life. Where do you even begin? His time at Juilliard and his friendship with Christopher Reeve, his struggling pre-fame days as a stand-up comic, his rise to fame on Mork and Mindy and his early film roles. I mean, the list just goes on. And then, you know, his mental health challenges later in life, or I mean, throughout his life. I mean, just there's so much you could do with something like that. But yeah, you know, some of those like social media, TikTok, Instagram impressionists, like sometimes you watch those and go, yeah, I can see it. It's close. Everybody has an Arnold impersonation, but the subtleties of this, it's worth watching.
I don't have an answer to that. How do you even include everything question? But my thinking is if somebody's already going out of their way to watch a Robin Williams biopic, I don't think it matters if it's 2 hours and 20 minutes and not an hour and 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Like you're already watching it because you're into the history of the actor and or you like biopics or whatever. Who cares if it's 2.5 hours? Just make them, you know, if they're going to make it.
Yeah. It's not sci-fi fans who are going to complain about the length of a movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I had my last call ended at like 2 or 2:30 today. And I was like, you know what? I got so fired up talking about Bond with Kendall and Dylan in the other episode. I think I'm going to go watch the new Bond movie. And then I saw the runtime and I'm like, there's no way I'll make it to the studio in time to record. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes long without trailers. So I'll go check it out. Cause that begs to be watched in a theater. I think
I've gotten hate from friends and loved ones about my inability to recall information about James Bond.
Yeah.
I'm really
glad I put you guys in that
position.
I
disappointed a lot of people.
People said they were screaming MI6 at their car radios.
Yeah.
I love it. I thought very fondly back on recording that episode in trivia.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm as big of a Bond fan as like Marvel or Star Wars, but like it's up there. And we've gone 120 plus episodes, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I'm a huge Bond fan. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm so glad that I prefaced, like, people would have done it anyways, but like, go ahead and yell out the answer in your car on the way to work, because it just got them all riled up against you two.
At the beginning of your trivia, you said on a scale of 1 to 10 of how diehard of a Bond fan you guys do think you are, where do you rate? And we're like 4, 5. And they're yelling at us, hey, no mention of the fact that Corey got like 7 or 8 of the questions right. Let's just yell at them for not knowing MI6. There's so many MIs with Mission Impossible and
The other one.
The other, so many MI homes if you live in Central Ohio.
So I'm watching season 8 of The Blacklist right now, and there's an M13 and there's an MI6.
Come on.
In The Blacklist.
There was Mission Impossible 2, MI2, there was MI3, I think.
Yeah.
Relax, people.
If you hear Corey derailing and you find it funny, go back and listen to our last episode. What is this? Is this 124?
Maybe.
So something. I think that was 123. I don't know. Listen to the last 10 or 20. But somewhere in there, you're going to find some Bond trivia, and it was a ton of fun.
This is 124, and that was 123, where we talked to James Bond. Right. We got some feedback that we often reference past episodes and don't let you guys know which numbers said episode was, so there you go.
There it is.
We don't listen to our podcast.
So like I said, go listen to the last 10 or 20, and you'll find Bond in there somewhere.
All right. Speaking of people derailing and in my life, derailing just a little bit enough that I started watching WWE again.
Ooh. Hey, back on the wagon, off the wagon, back, on the wagon.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
One of those.
Are you on or off?
I'm on the WWE wagon.
Okay.
And I made a joke about how that means my life's not going so. My life is going fantastic, by the way.
As long as the wagon's not derailing.
Because only people that watch WWE.
That's the joke. Jokes only work when generalization is acceptable.
Yeah.
But you guys, we can't call aliens aliens anymore. Demi Lovato said that it's derogatory to call aliens aliens, and we need to refer to them as extraterrestrials. Now, before you go to Babylon B and see if this was a joke headline, I assure you it is not. Demi is upset.
Was it Demi or was it... Oh, I get her and Selena Gomez.
Dua Lipa? Nope. Doja Cat?
Nope. Don't know any what you're saying anymore. What words?
Anyway, Kendall, you're back on the wagon.
Back on the wagon.
And have the story. I didn't join you. We talked about
that
we each wanted to go back and pick up again. Now that there are live audiences in the arenas again,
we talked about theoretically doing just that.
Yeah, and you did do that because your life's bad. And I want to know. Just kidding.
It's the trope of this mustard stained white tank top and a Bush Light next to you.
Camouflage Bush Light.
Camouflage Bush Light.
Callback.
And
3D. I threw
that's who your WWE audience is. It's those people and me.
Have teams shifted? Have people gone from?
Oh yeah.
Like okay.
There's been some moves going on. You were watching long enough, all the way up until COVID. You already started to see the turn of, what's his name?
Roman Reigns?
No, his brother.
Oh, the twins?
Nope. Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins started to turn a little bit before COVID, and you could see at that point that was the road that they wanted to head down, but it hadn't really happened yet.
Yeah.
He's a complete jackass now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's full heel.
Full heel. Roman Reigns, I don't know how to peg him. He might be kind of heel-ish now too, but not in the same kind of way. He has Paul Heyman now.
Oh.
and
Kendall's favorite announcer.
My name. But there is this thing where it's like Paul Heyman is definitely working for Roman Reigns. maybe still Brock Lesnar, but Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar are still diametrically opposed to one another. And so you have that whole dynamic of what I think is going on as Paul Heyman is trying to hide from Roman Reigns the fact that he's still helping Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
So that's where that story is now. The Man is still amazing.
Yeah.
She had a baby, by the way, you know, off camera.
I didn't know.
She married Seth Rollins also off camera.
So Rollins had turned full heel right before they went to pandemic, no audience things. Because he was the...
Was he full heel
by
then?
Yeah, he was the... what is what
he
was
had
his
like
nickname?
The one glove kind of thing.
He had the one glove, and he was the something savior or the...
Yeah, okay, I remember that now.
Yeah, that was all...
That
okay.
That had already happened.
Yeah.
It's even worse. He's way obnoxious now. It's... And he's obnoxious in a Corbin kind of way now.
Mm.
Like, just a yapper. And, yeah, don't like him anymore.
Can I throw in a plug?
Yeah.
So I can't contribute to this conversation at all. But I will say, if you don't think Kendall and Corey talk about wrestling enough and you want to hear a little more, a little shout out to our friends at the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast or ODPH podcast. Go check them out. They talk about a lot of sports and wrestling. And so if you're into that and Kendall and Corey don't do a tangent on wrestling at some point, then you can go check that out to get a little bit more wrestling fix.
There you go.
Just throwing that out there to tag him.
Thank you, Dylan. We'll be sure to check that out. Who's the Irish guy from NXT that came over?
Oh,
who?
Finn Balor.
Yeah.
Is it Finn Balor?
Dude, nice.
I've seen enough memes.
He's now a part of the regular WWE rotation.
He's full-time in there. He was really popular.
Is he still doing his alter ego guy? Or was that a long time ago? The red and black painted up guy?
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
Maybe so I missed it.
Maybe he's just Finn Balor now. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Look up who Finn Balor's alter ego was, since you're not contributing to this conversation.
Yeah, I could contribute.
So I just started, so I've watched the latest two episodes of SmackDown and one episode of Raw so far.
All right. Well, you might be our resident WWE commentator, and until I get back into it.
Whoa. SmackDown. So the latest SmackDown that I've watched.
Is that him? There's aliases. If you scroll down, just right there. Right there. Stop.
The Demon.
The Demon. I don't recall the Demon.
Yeah. Okay. What were you going to say?
So the latest SmackDown that I just watched was a super long one. Hosting color commentary on SmackDown, none other than Pat McAfee.
He's been okay.
He is amazing.
Yeah.
At WWE commentating.
He did some WWE Inside Edition type stuff where it would be not during the event, but it would be on Saturdays, they'd have an hour or two where it was here's what you missed this week. And he did some of that stuff, but he's never done ringside.
He was doing ringside. It was, I couldn't get enough of Pat McAfee talking
he cracked
ringside.
Me up.
He was, there was one moment where you had one of the, I think it was one of the Usos, just jumped up onto the table like they do. Didn't smash anything. Jumped up onto the table, gestured to the crowd, and then jumped back down. Pat McAfee standing up and goes, "Oh yeah, and you got to be on the desk."
He's great. They would cut to him during College Game Day last year.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Remember that, Dylan? On College Game Day, they'd cut to Pat McAfee in studio, and he would he would have this thing with Bear where they would poke each other and make fun of each other. And they loved cutting to him because he would dress up and he's really animated. And he's got an interesting story.
What a guy.
Yeah.
He is the man who has possibly made punting cool.
Yep.
He's a punter.
He's a punter.
And one of the most popular NFL figures today.
Huge podcast, multiple shows, into WWE world, also in college football world. Yeah, fascinating guy. Man, where else do you get this kind of content? Deep dives on Squid Game and pro wrestling in one episode.
Hulu, by the way, if you want to watch WWE.
Hulu's
where
it's
at. You don't have to have a special subscription, just the regular standard cheap one. And you can watch them, I think, a day or two late.
Yeah, my family was getting upset because I was DVRing Monday Night Raw, Thursday Night SmackDown, or Friday Night SmackDown.
Friday night.
And NXT on Wednesdays. So yeah. My DVR was filling up, and I wasn't getting to them as fast as they wanted. So it's like 92% full, and they're like, would you watch these dang wrestling things?
I'm enjoying it.
Maybe it's good that I don't go back to it.
Maybe.
Work's been kind of crazy. I should probably do that. Well, was there anything else we wanted to talk about in this episode? This was a really fun one. It's good to be back in studio. I miss seeing you guys. Sometimes we do the Zoom when schedulings don't work out nicely, but man, it was fun.
It's good.
Yeah.
Little shout out. I'm wearing some merch from Artius Man. That's ArtiusMan.com. They are a fantastic partner of the From the Middle podcast. And if you don't know what they have, you haven't been listening to our podcast. You need to head over to their website. They've got awesome men's grooming, skincare products, candles, cool merch like my hat, beard oils. Am I missing anything major?
Balms. Salves, lotions.
Incredible, like US-made, super high-end, but very affordable products. And if you load up your cart and use promo code THEMIDDLE, you'll save 25% off your first order, which is an incredible value, especially considering Christmas is coming up and lots of people are going to need gifts.
Indeed.
So go ahead and load up your cart. Use promo code THEMIDDLE at ArtiusMan.com. Get some sweet stuff, and you'll be super glad that you did.
Yeah. Made in the USA, which means that it's not sitting on a ship somewhere in the Pacific Ocean.
It's actually going to ship to you.
It's going to get to you.
Yep. Awesome. And not just stuff for guys. A lot of stuff for guys, but not just stuff for guys.
Well, I mean, there's candles and things.
Yeah, there's some candles, and anyone could use some of the shower products and whatever. Great stuff.
Yep.
That's it.
Okay. Well, big gulps, huh? Cool. Well, see you later.
Bye.